Well, hi everybody. Father Alex here, host of the Godcast. Welcome to another episode. I am the vicar of St Matthew's Church in Burnley. I'm also the author of Our Daily Bread, Argos to the Altar, A Priest Story. Go check that out. It's available in all good bookshops and online. My guest on the Godcast today is Rosie Wright. Now, Rosie is an anchor for media and broadcasting. She's currently working for Times Radio, where she hosts the early morning breakfast show. So, we're going to explore a bit of her career and a bit of her thoughts about the forthcoming general election and lots of other things as well. So, do now enjoy this interview with Rosie Wright. Well, I'm delighted to say that joining me on the Godcast today is Rosie Wright. Rosie, how are you?
Really well, thank you for having me.
Is this the end of the working day for you now, or have you still got stuff to do?
Oh, the working day's long finished. Fridays for me finish actually at 5:59 a.m. And then I have a bit of a golden rule, sign off the radio program, and then that's it for Fridays. Go home, relax, the weekend's on. So yeah, I'm about sort of 5 or 6 hours into the weekend.
Yeah, we'll get into your breakfast show in a minute, Rosie, if we can. But just if you would tell us a bit about your journey to into journalism and where it started, because your job's is very unique in many ways, isn't it? There's not many anchors around and whatnot. So was this an interest and a passion that started from a young age?
I think this will become fairly obvious in the next half an hour or so, but I just love talking and talking to people. And I thought there's got to be a way that this becomes my profession. So I was fairly determined that kind of broadcasting or particularly presenting was going to be my bread and butter if that was possible. And I have had, like most broadcasters, really a bit of an unconventional journey, and there's not like an obvious ladder to climb necessarily. My very, very first job was answering the phones at LBC. That was amazing. I learned so much in that kind of incredible broadcasting hub. And then I took a really unconventional job decision, which really sort of plays into your field of expertise a bit more. I started doing the breakfast show on Premier Christian Radio.
Really?
And that was such a big gamble because I thought, oh my gosh, like I really want to do this job. And I've got found this kind of niche opportunity. But is that going to kind of pigeonhole my whole career? And I'm just going to be this kind of religious broadcaster. But in the end, I sort of just stomached up the courage, thought I'll do that. Did that for 2.5 years, had an absolutely brilliant time. A whole cast of characters you can imagine who were working there. And then decided to take it on from there, went freelance, went to Euronews. I presented and anchored their rolling news programme, Good Morning Europe, for 2.5 years. Came back to that, was based in France, came back to helped launch GB News. I've done some sort of freelancing for Radio 4 in the meantime. And then I decided I wanted my own show again. And Times Radio Early Breakfast is my home now.
But just let's go back to Premier Christian Radio because not everybody watches or listens to the Godcast is a Christian. But for those who don't know, it's quite a significant radio station. It's a national broadcaster, isn't it? What was your concerns that you might be typecast as a Christian or something else or?
Yeah, it's a really, really fantastic but unique broadcasting home. Very much the criteria is, as a Christian radio station, you've got to be serving some different purpose. You know, it's kind of news, but from a Christian perspective, there's no point, you know, why would you tune in to listen to it unless you're going to get kind of a distinctively different angle? So we do the news agenda of the day, but we'd be interviewing Christian MPs rather than any MP. You know, that kind of just helps lay out the differences. But I was nervous actually about being so transparent about my own faith. You've got different challenges of you've got to kind of be politically neutral, but you've also got to kind of hold this tension of, as you well know, you know, the church is it broken into so many different parts, and you can't really have an allegiance to one part either. So you've got to be sort of religiously neutral and politically neutral. And I did have, and I'm sort of a bit ashamed to admit it. I thought people are going to think I'm really, really strange that I've taken this job and think, why are you doing it? But just from a sort of strategic career path, I thought, do you know what? This is a national radio show. It's got over 1 million listeners a week. I'd be mad to turn down a breakfast show. I'm going to get so much experience there. I was live when the EU referendum results came out, when Donald Trump was elected as president. all these sort of crazy things happened. I thought, I'm sitting on a breakfast show. I'm not going to get this opportunity anywhere else. And actually, I think I was quite young, 22, maybe 23. I had so many ideas. They just kind of let me get on. I didn't have to really compete with anyone. They let me get on with it. And I totally loved it.
Yeah. Well, do you know what, Rosie? I've got a dozen or so questions, but I've already put those to one side now, because just you talking about that has made me think about Christian politicians, because I've learned this through my experience of doing the Godcast, is that there are more than you would imagine, aren't there? There are quite a lot of them who maybe off the record would identify as a person of faith, not just Christians. But it's a bit of a taboo subject when it comes to broadcasting, isn't it? Do you find that? I mean, do you see the difference between working at Premier and now working at Times?
Not. I just think it's a personal thing, and people are nervous in a job that's where balance and impartiality is so important. You kind of don't want to reveal things about yourself that might make people question how capable you are at doing your job, or anything that might, you know, sway you one way or the other. And, you know, as you know, politics and religion, they're so intertwined with so many, even just recent stories of what's been happening in the Church of England, or different pieces of legislation, or MPs that sort of put their head above the parapet, and then part of their reporting becomes, oh, well, they're a Christian. And you think, well, it all gets a bit muddled. So I think there is a little bit of caution in saying, well, sort of, this is who I am and this is what I believe in your job, because you want to sort of safeguard anyone accusing you of bias, which is tricky, or people just thinking you're naive and you're silly because you believe in God. And therefore, you know, the main thing I want to hold on to is that people trust me and they believe I'm going to have a balanced opinion of the news. So people are a bit more careful. I mean, at Premier Christian Radio, obviously pretty much everyone was a Christian. There are Christian politicians and there are Christian journalists. Maybe they're just, it's not the thing they lead with, I'd say.
I'm so fascinated by this, because Tim Farron, of course, who was the leader of the Liberal Democrats, effectively gave up his position because of his religious faith. And I think that's a sadness, you know. And I actually see it in my own work. You know, we do quite a lot of community outreach work, and people who may want to invest some money, I think they're a little bit less reluctant to engage with you if you are of a particular faith or organisation. You know, so you have to kind of then do the work and convince them that you're not extreme or any way, and you're not against this or you're not against that. So I find it that's an interesting topic to start with. In terms of your own career, Rosie, you were with GB News, weren't you? And it came with controversy, GB News, or it still does, doesn't it? Was that difficult for you? Or were you, again, you know, looking at this from a professional perspective?
There's always going to be controversy, I think, when you're in broadcasting. Tim Farron actually was on the Inspirational Breakfast programme when he had decided, and he'd been writing about it a little bit, and was come to the conclusion to say, okay, I'm going to tell people that I lied. And he did that with us on the programme, I think, probably to the benefit of Kate Forbes, who's just had sort of a slightly similar experience in Scotland more recently. But GB News was really, well, it was controversial before we even started. And that was quite amusing, really, because you thought, okay, just hold, just wait, just see. Ultimately, it's startup territory. So loads of things are going to change. They're going to have to try, you know, I was there for nearly 2 years. The schedule went upside down so many different times. I had many different roles in the time that I was there. And we were doing something really quite different. You know, Talk TV's launched now, and I do quite a bit of work there. I'm currently covering their breakfast programme for Nicola Thorpe, who's on maternity leave. And Talk TV's had a bit of the same. But I think there was sort of an industry thing that was slightly, ever so slightly, saying, okay, we'll just watch you fail, because nothing like this had happened in 30 years. It was this huge project. We launched, I think everyone would admit, too early. So, you know, we weren't in focus. Things were blurry. The sound was out of sync. So it gave people we gave an open goal for people to say, come and laugh at us. And I was out reporting the breadth of the country, actually, all the way from the Scottish borders to Skegness that week we opened. And there was this Twitter account called GB News Fails. And you just think, oh my goodness, it's just going to keep everything I'm doing, anything that's going wrong. And you check the Twitter account and you think, here we go. That was, I think, very kindly and maybe empathetically from whoever was running it, that got that shut down later on. But you kind of thought we were expecting the criticism come at us. And truthfully, for all the technical stuff, we really deserved it when we started. And you just had to kind of paint on a smile, raw enthusiasm, and say, I'm just going to keep going every single day and just be relentless and not look at the stories, not look at the leaks, and just say, I trust my team and we're going to work really hard. And obviously, there's then been more kind of editorial question marks as the station's developed. And it now isn't the channel that we kind of launched when we began. I said we've gone through many different iterations, and I'm really kind of proud to have worked there and what we achieved, especially in those very early days. But as the channel developed, you know, as a journalist who doesn't take a side, there's not really a home for me at GB News in the same way. I mean, I can do reporting and do the news, but in terms of presenting, what they want is really punchy characters with, you know, something controversial to say, and I don't fit in that mold. So I thought, well, when the opportunity comes up, it will be time to look for something else. But I think they've done a brilliant job in being really kind of disruptive in the media landscape, and probably there was a need for a kind of disruptive channel like GB News. And yeah, I wish them all there really well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's 9 years this year since I was ordained, and before that I worked for Argos for nearly 20 years, so I can't help sometimes to look over my shoulder and see how they're doing. Do you think that GB News is a broadcast that has got longevity? Do you think it'll be around in, I don't know, 5-10 years?
Do you know, I think you could ask that question about all broadcasters currently. I think radio, and GB News is on the radio as well, feels really safe, and that we're going to kind of be all tuning into the radio in 5 years' time. But I think that's kind of the question that's looming over all live television. I mean, we've had quite a brilliant 3 weeks at the start of this year with things like The Traitors, The Post Office, Mr. Bates, be the Post Office, which have had, you know, millions of people tuning in, which makes me feel a bit like, yes, okay, people are sitting down and watching the TV. But, you know, live news channels, it's a problem they're battling at Sky. BBC World News Channel obviously decided to close the latter part of next year. So I think it's actually less about, you know, what will happen to the future of GB News, but all of these, you know, almost 24-hour news channels. And ultimately, if I don't know how the election's going to go, but in the polls right now, putting Labour significantly ahead of the Conservatives, I think that will be an interesting shift. If Labour come into power, potentially those channels that voice the other side then may get a bit of a boost in popularity. We'll have to sort of see how that plays out. That may really benefit GB News and, you know, do less for some of the more traditional broadcasters.
Yeah, I mean, I love radio. I love getting broadcasters like yourself on, Rosie. It's, you know, I probably listen to more radio than television these days. But that kind of political commentary market is quite saturated, isn't it, at the moment? But I was wondering what you thought these channels like yourselves, Times Radio, LBC, Talk Radio, all the ones that I listen to, have done to the BBC as a broadcaster, particularly in radio. Do you think it's been a good thing for radio that you guys are around?
I definitely. Competition is good for all of us, for sure. And let's be realistic, you know, the number of people tuning into the Today programme in the morning, yeah, okay, the numbers are coming down, but they are just sort of almost unrivaled. My career, as I said, started at LBC. So I love that kind of more punchy, really kind of getting into the conversation. I mean, that station, I think, is just utterly brilliant. Mm. What really pains me, actually, is the decisions the BBC... I love the BBC. I had a show on BBC Radio Cambridgeshire doing their Sunday morning programme for a short stint. I just loved it. I was a reporter at Radio London, and just, you know, I was just wandering around, talking to people about the stories that really mattered that day. I totally loved it. But I'm really, really worried about the conversations about the licence fee and the cuts we've seen to BBC local radio, because I just think it is the most trusted news organisation. All the other challenger brands, I think, provide a different lens in which to look at a story. But the BBC is so precious, it needs to be looked after and the journalism needs to be supported, because news channels that have more commercial, that have commercial interests are maybe not going to focus on some of the stories that don't seem so sexy or headline grabbing. And I think that would be a problem if the BBC reduces its offering and those other commercial channels become the main source of news. I don't think that's going to happen, but I would be worried if that did.
Yeah, it's interesting because I do often approach broadcasters, and I've had loads of the guys from Talk Radio on. They've been absolutely brilliant with me. But if I approach the BBC, sometimes they, well, obviously won't say who, but people come back and say, well, I'd like to come on, but you know, what are you going to ask, and what you, exactly? I can't be compromised, and you know, I can't risk saying this, which I think is a shame actually, because just doing this podcast on my own, which is a one man band, I have complete autonomy. I can ask questions that I'd like to ask, and I don't always have to get the opposite to the argument, which I suppose leads me to my next question, Rosie, is in terms of your early morning time show, how much autonomy do you have in that? You know, just if you could, because I think people do love broadcasting, but we don't always get a look behind the microphone. I nearly said the camera, but obviously, you know, behind the microphone. What does your day look like? So you're on air at 5 o'clock, aren't you? So just could you give us a bit of a picture of what your day is?
Yeah, sure. And to be really truthful, if you'd come and asked me on this podcast to say, you know, who was I voting for? And, you know, what was my hot take on all these topics? I would have just said the same. I can't do it, because the most important thing to me is that you're always kind of steering a conversation for people to be able to make their own mind up. I never think, as a journalist, it's my responsibility to tell you how to think. I want to kind of just provide you with as many of the facts as possible. So Times Radio early breakfast starts, it broadcasts 5 till 6 in the morning. Eye-wateringly early, but I'm always surprised by the number of people who are up that early. And I am sort of the kind of editor of my own program. So I set up the guests that I have, I choose the agenda. I mean, I might look to what the Times newspaper is covering that day, or chat with colleagues about what they're going to be leading with on the breakfast program. But in essence, it's totally up to me. There's no one sort of leaning on my shoulder, or, you know, whispering in my ear, or sending me emails to say, you've got to put this, or we're going to go hard on this. It's up to me, which I love. It gives me huge creativity, so much freedom, and largely there's kind of a familiarity to it. So I get in the office about 3:30 in the morning. I'll see what the big stories are, hopefully the day before I've set up the appropriate guests to talk about the main stories. If something's broken overnight, I'll quickly get on the phone and try to book someone else. Time differences can really help in that when you need someone to be up really, really quickly. And then I'll prepare scripts, have a kind of think about what questions I want to ask the people I've booked, and the show goes live 5 till 6. Then I have a bit of a rest, stop, relax, and then it's thinking, you know, later on in the day, okay, what do I think is the lead story? What's going to be the most interesting thing to talk about tomorrow? And because I've got freedom, I don't have to follow everyone else. I can kind of decide what I think is the most important story. Every day there'll be sort of a political commentator, a newspaper reviewer. We go through the business news, particularly after 5:30. Lots of people working in, you know, the city are up and about and listening at that time. But then there'll kind of be 3, 4 maybe other kind of topical stories, and normally a little bit of international news, but largely it's a real overview of what's happening in the world, all the way from business, sport, news, politics, bit of entertainment, maybe something about the royals, whatever kind of I think is interesting that day is what turns up. Variety.
And the concept of Times Radio, or the purpose, for want of a better word, is what, Rosie? Is it to bring the, you know, obviously readership of paper print has been on the decline for many years. Is it to try and migrate some of those people over to a different platform, or is it to attract new listeners? Do you know what your demographic is, for example?
I think that's truthfully probably a question for the managing editor of the station, Tim Lavelle, who's brilliant. But for me, the purpose is, well, first of all, just create really engaging, entertaining, informative radio that's, you know, not as kind of combative maybe as Radio 4 have been. It's a little bit more, I would say, that the station takes a slightly more gentle and maybe more entertaining way of looking at stories. So you've got presenters with a bit more personality, and they've got more freedom as well to do that, where they don't have that, you know, on Radio 4, let's say, or 5 Live. And then it's also about, you know, showcasing the brilliant journalism in the Times as well. So, you know, we want to all the time. And what an incredible resource to have every day. You know, this morning I had the Times education editor speaking about some of the reviews that have been taking place in terms of what Ofsted are doing in terms of their examinations of schools in England. I mean, this story's been kind of rumbling on the last few weeks after absolutely tragically the suicide of a headmistress and Ofsted have said, looking at the reports after that, to say, look, we need to really change how we're taking part in our inspections. So, of course, having the education editor of the Times is brilliant. She just interviewed the new head of Ofsted, then I had a teacher on. So, you know, kind of looking at borrowing stories from the Times and also kind of showcasing people back to say, you know, if you want to be more about this, then, you know, the Times has got a write up. So we're kind of showcasing the very best of the newspaper. But first and foremost, the priority is that if you'd never picked up the Times newspaper, you'd listen and, you know, have a fantastic, whatever, person keeping you company for however long you tuned in, be informed and entertained.
Yeah. And you said earlier that you've been covering on Talk TV. And just for the listener or the watcher, explain how that works. So how can you be on two different radio networks?
Yeah.
On the bigger group, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so Talk TV is owned by News UK. So we are literally in the same building. Virgin Radio's there, the Times, the Sunday Times, the Sun, Times Radio and Talk TV. Sometimes I am almost literally in the same place at the same time. I have on very few occasions presented early breakfast on Times Radio 5 till 6, already gone through hair and makeup. And then as soon as I read the end, so introduce the newsreader at 6 o'clock, run downstairs in the lift, go down 14 floors and then walk into the TV studio about 3 minutes late and do the news programme on Talk TV, which is 6 until 9:30. But that is a kind of, they call that doing the double bubble in the broadcasting industry, but it's not very good for you or for your sleep. So that's definitely rare. But yeah, they're all part of the same family.
Yeah, I've been very lucky that I had a book published with HarperCollins North, and I even established that they were part of the group as well. It is a huge organisation, isn't it? And this whole radio evolution is kind of, I mean, Talk TV has changed quite a lot, hasn't it, over the last 12 months? It's become as much a TV channel as a news, as a radio channel now. How do you find the difference working with, you've been with Jeremy Kyle, haven't you? How do you find that you're kind of doing not a double act, for want of a better word, but as opposed to working on your own, are you enjoying that role?
It's so different having a co-presenter than doing the show by yourself, because, you know, when you're by yourself, you've got total control, you know how to steer things along, but there's not that kind of capacity or scope for things to surprise you, entertain you, for things to just take a slightly different take. And it's been really brilliant in my career. I've sat next to some utterly fantastic broadcasters. The first person was on Inspirational Breakfast with John Pantry, who was a Church of England vicar. We did the show together. That was great. I worked with Simon McCoy at GB News. We did the breakfast show together for a few months. I learned so much from him. Eamon Holmes a little bit at GB News, and with Jeremy. These are broadcasters who've had, you know, decades of experience. So you learn so much, even just from kind of the way people ask a question, or, you know, they've had so many hours under their belt that it's really sort of fun to sit with them. So it's fun. It's very much your show. It's very much not your show. It's a team. And it's actually so much easier. If there's a really tricky story or something that just needs real careful handling, you can feel better supported when there's someone sat next to you. And it definitely is more fun. And when guests don't show up and you've got to fill for 5 or 6 minutes, when you're on your own on the radio, oh, that can feel long. So when you've got someone to chat to, it's much, much easier.
Yeah. And you know, I've learned just in the last few years that your job is not easy, is it? It is hard work. I mean, because one of the things, I mean, it's so fast paced, isn't it? You know, I mean, I've been invited onto different radio shows to talk about my book and stuff. And then I'm like loving the moment. And then, but you'd soon realize that you're next, you know, thanks for coming in, you're gone. But it is so fast paced, isn't it? And when you're a broadcaster 24 hours a day or you know, as near as it, it's hard work, isn't it?
I think if you love it, it's not as difficult. I think if you were someone who, I get a lot of people who want to be presenters, and I think, okay, then you need to kind of present things. You can't pretend loving the news, I don't think, because it would be impossible to keep up. I mean, it's like endlessly having to do, if it felt like homework to prepare for it, I think you wouldn't be able to do it. You have to genuinely be interested in the world around you and know enough about everything so that if something develops when you're on air, and this happens all the time, you know, I used to do a rolling international news program at Euronews. You know, it does, something might, you know, develop in Poland, or there might be a terrorist attack somewhere, or there's a you know, financial problem in another part of the continent, and you've just got to know enough that you're never going to be totally caught out because it's live. Having said that, when I've done things that are pre-recorded, I really struggle. At Premier Christian Radio, they asked us to, at quite a short notice, it has to be said, got all lots of the presenters to record books of the Bible. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I got an email something saying, can you record Leviticus? I was like, okay, right, here we go. And sitting in, reading like an audio book, well, in live broadcasting, you've got to be okay with making a mistake and it doesn't matter. I suddenly thought, oh my God, I've got to read this perfectly. Doing it once, I thought, well, I could have done that a bit better. And the idea and the opportunity to do it again and again and again, I just found so, so torturous. I think being live, being across things, being on top of things, riding on the adrenaline, if you love doing it, yes, it's hard, but it is so, so, so fun that it's worth it. So live over pre-recorded, and yeah, I think you can't pretend to love the news.
There are some strange words in Leviticus as well. It's not an easy one to...
And we normally say, if you get someone's name wrong or something, you just have to say it confidently and quickly and hope it's gone over. You can't do that recording Leviticus in advance. Yeah, that was
sometimes
probably
people
my least
ask...
favourite broadcasting.
Yeah, sometimes people ask me, as the vicar, what is this word? And I just say, I've got no idea. I just don't know. I'm sorry. Don't say it as you see, because some of them are a bit bizarre. Just with we are in the election year, Rosie. Do you see the political manoeuvring going on in your job? You know, kind of people trying to get their house in order before the big day. Just give us a bit of what that's like at the moment.
I think so. And I think we're going to get really, really tired of it. You know, we know that it's maybe 10, 11 months until this election actually comes around. And what you're really seeing, because the Conservatives, we know where they stand. We know what they're trying to do. We've got those five pledges, fine. The Labour Party, they've got these now sort of five missions. And what we know for sure is the messaging of the Labour Party. So every time we speak to a shadow cabinet minister, they've got their sort of narrative nailed down. You know, they never say the word Tory without followed by the word chaos, Tory chaos every time. And Keir Starmer is very much trying to sort of lean into this. I'm the safe. He often describes himself as being mundane, which as a politician, you think this is really a bizarre kind of strategy that you're taking. But he's obviously thought, right, I'm looking at the dynamic right now, what the public are thinking, and being a safe pair of hands seems to be the right option. So what it's really interesting from a broadcasting perspective, when you're preparing for these interviews, is you think, right, I can already see the really key kind of pieces of messaging, particularly the opposition want to get across, and also from the Conservatives. And it's also interesting to see which politicians say yes to doing different interviews. So the Labour Party, I can just speak from Talk TV's perspective, have really ramped up the number of interviews they're doing there. I think it's because they want to be visible. They want to be on message and get that message as far and as wide as possible. So you can see them sort of laying very much, the groundwork is laid, and they're just thinking, we're going to take all these opportunities to get our messages out. But, you know, people say it's a done deal. Maybe it is. I just think I've been in newsrooms when we left the European Union, when Donald Trump was elected president, and, you know, there is always, always room for surprise. So we'll just have to see what happens the next few months.
What is the feeling amongst yourself and your peers about it? I mean, a few weeks ago, I heard this term, as long as they don't drop the mink vase in reference to the Labour Party, they're going to walk this election. Do you think there's truth in that? Do you think, you know, I mean, basically, if they didn't say another word between now and November or whenever it is, that their likelihood is they're probably going to get in? It seems that way.
I would say the view of probably 80% of the political commentators that I speak to would say this is Starmer's. That definitely seems to be the narrative. What I think is really interesting is something Sir John Curtis said just in the last 24 hours is actually turnout, he's anticipating, will be quite low. Because when you get a situation, his analysis was, well, the two parties aren't actually that different from each other. People have assumed they know who's going to win. And they think maybe that Rishi Sunak and Keir Starmer are a bit boring. So people won't feel, on both sides, won't feel motivated to vote. I think the problem for broadcasters is elections are really, really important. If the public are feeling a bit, I'm bored of this already in January, you know, we've got a responsibility to tell this story. We don't want to tell boring, boring stories. And I think the bigger problem is going to be, I think there's a sentiment that people are fed up with hearing about and talking about politics, and it's going to be the biggest story probably of the year. So how do you can't change the story of what's happening, but it's got to be exciting and engaging, and we've got responsibility to find interesting angles and make sure it stays like that, so people stay as much as they can be engaged.
Yeah, do you think it's about personality as well as politics? You know, I've kind of had these conversations with other people. I've been so blessed, Rosie, to get some fabulous guests, of which you are one, of course. You know, who I've interviewed, and people have said to me before, "Oh, you want to," you know, like George Galloway, for example, was somebody who people had, you know, said could be quite prickly, and I interviewed him. And if I take the politics out of his vocabulary, what a wonderful orator, what a wonderful speaker. And I felt the same about John McDonnell from the Labour Party. I felt the same about Edwina Curry when Edwina Curry came on. Do you think personality is almost part of the deal?
Oh, it's really hard to know, isn't it? I mean, Boris Johnson had an abundance of personality.
Yeah.
And in some ways that made him a brilliant politician, but that was potentially also his downfall as well. So I think it's interesting that Keir Starmer's taken a stance that says, I'm going to call myself or my ideas mundane, because he's realised maybe this is a kind of an antidote to the kind of the bluster that we saw from Boris Johnson. I think Boris Johnson recently was talking about some of his strategies in interviews, and he was saying, I didn't know what the answer was. I would literally, we know he did this, use sort of bluster and sort of to just get out of them. So personality is so clearly so important in politics. It's all about engaging with people, persuading people to vote for you, with you. But maybe the public have had enough. You know, Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak are both much more muted than Boris Johnson. And one of them, unless something really crazy happens, will be the next prime minister.
Yeah. And on that kind of personality level, Rosie, which politicians have you really enjoyed talking to, or politicians who've left their mark, not because of what their political view is, but how they've maybe been with you or spoke with you or treated you?
It's really hard to sort of single people out. I think what makes the difference is when a politician stops sounding like a politician. You know, sometimes you think, it doesn't matter how I'm going to phrase this question, I know you've got your message, and you're just going to say that, even if I say in the interview, please, can we just have a normal conversation? Doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Sometimes it's just, it goes over their head. So, or it doesn't. They know that you want to have a normal conversation, but they've decided they're not going to do that. So I really, really do wish that we had a bit of a shift where we had less soundbitey interviews and we could just have real conversations with people. Because I think that is, you know, from a broadcasting perspective, we're trying to come up with engaging conversations. So anyone who's going to speak to you sort of openly and honestly, rather than just deliver soundbite small pieces of the manifesto, is going to be a winner. I think genuinely for the audience and for the presenter and the producers who booked them and everyone. But, you know, that doesn't happen.
No. And in terms of just kind of as we've been chatting for a lovely 35 minutes. If the Tories are wiped out at the next general election, what does your experience tell you that they will do? Do you think they'll almost try and clean the slate, like, you know, Starmer came in after Jeremy Corbyn? What do you think their strategy might be post-general election? Any idea?
I have got no idea. Probably one of two things. Either there'll be an awful lot of infighting. We know we've got the kind of five factions, and that this week, in just how they've been handling the Rwanda plan, there's been so much sort of division in the party. So either they'll have many internal arguments, or it will be a really uniting moment where they think, right, we need to sort of band together in a different way. My job is to report on things that happen as they do. I have got no idea what they'll do.
No, well, you're in for a busy year. Just away from the broadcasting and the radio, what your kind of hobbies and interests, Rosie? What do you like to do to wind down? Have you got any keen interests?
Yeah, I'm currently training for a marathon in Paris in April. And then the thing that I totally, totally love, when I lived in France, I set up a community choir called Leon Sings, which was for expats who basically didn't have many friends. And so I kind of created this motley crew of what turned out to be, you know, over 70 people in the end, of people who just wanted friends and loved singing. So I love doing that. And I've set up a choir in South London here called Clapham Sings, which is the same kind of community choir, which has got nothing really to do with singing, but all about kind of having, I say, no audition, but you need to have enthusiasm and turn up every week. And that is, of all the broadcasting I do, running choir once a week is definitely the highlight.
So you were a singer then?
I love singing. I would potentially have kind of pursued singing. That would be my dream sort of age 14. I'm one of four girls growing up. Right. So we had a very, very musical household. And my mum gave me she's my probably my biggest, but my best critic. And she said, I was wanted to do some kind of musical theatre. And she said, "You're not a triple threat." And I thought, "Oh, okay," which is the having singing, acting and dancing. And it's not you. Okay, I'll be firmly put in my place here. It won't be singing, it will be broadcasting instead.
Well, I've got two daughters who are in that, they're grown up, but we're off to see Hamilton tonight in,
oh, amazing,
in Manchester. So, I mean, I'm not that au fait with it, but I'm looking forward to it because they are, and so it should be a lovely night. So
my absolute recommendation is to go and see Guys and Dolls if you haven't already.
I saw that at the Exchange in Manchester a few years ago. It's a wonderful musical, yeah.
Particularly the one they've got at London Bridge now, where it's kind of immersive seating. It's the best thing I've ever seen, so I really recommend it.
Yeah, I mean, I find theatre just generally a great, just a great way to wind down, and you know, the job can be quite difficult sometimes, and it's just tapping your toe along to something lovely. It's nice, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible.
Rosie, thanks so much for coming on. It's been a real
pleasure talking
to you and learning a bit more about your work and your career. And we wish you well, and you're in for a busy year. So good luck with everything that you do. Thank you.
Thank you.